nightmare is over.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice. So nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
So happy to be here with you, President Putin. I mean, Vice President Trump. I mean, Mel.
A little confused there.
Just a tiny, tiny.
You're wearing your France shirt, though. Is that,
I am.
Is that for the Olympics? Or?
No, it's because we're not there.
You were going.
I'm sitting at home going, ooh la la.
And smoking. And
smoking a lot.
eating soft cheese.
Exactly. I did have some soft cheese.
Not bathing.
Soft cheese this morning, yes.
See, I knew it.
But I got this last year because I thought we weren't going to, you know, regular listeners know. My spouse has a job at the University of Paris, so we get to go. It's not like we're big world travelers, but we get to go there over the summer so he can do his job. And so we didn't go this year because the university isn't bringing foreign scholars in because of the Olympics.
Olympics.
It's crazy. So so we didn't go this year, and so I'm wearing my France shirt just to.
Oh, okay.
And I'm also a little bit proud of them. I'm a little bit proud of them right now.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because.
That?
Well, because when it looked like the right wing was going to do
really well,
a lot of people that were contesting in minor parties stepped away. The left parties got together. I mean, they're still going to fight with each other. That's just France. But they got together seeing a clear and present danger. And the French voters came out in droves.
Mm-hmm.
The last election they'd had there, was much lower than we have than they have in the past. Of course, it's still much bigger than we have in the United States. But something like 60% of the folks came out to vote to defeat the right, to make sure that they were not, the majority party in France. And so I'm just a little proud of them right now.
Very good. So, did you hear that there were concerns they were going to make some of the swimmers swim in the Seine?
And the
mayor.
Yeah,
of Paris said, "Well, we're going to clean it up."
Yeah.
And what's that?
Mayor Hidalgo. Yeah.
Yeah, and she said that to prove how clean we'll make it.
Yes.
I'm going to go for a swim.
Yes.
But then, Parisians, being who they are, came up with.
She made the mistake of saying when she
exactly
was gonna,
when
that was the problem.
So then there was a plan. I can't say the exact wording of how they phrased this, but it was
Mayored. Yes, they,
there was an organized effort to poop in the Seine, and not just to poop in the Seine, but to poop it and time it so that it would hit the mayor when she was out for her swim, and there were like websites with the.
It's like synchronized swimming.
Information
on all
they had information like on the on you know the flow where you were and when you would have to do that to based on the current and
even without the poop crusade, they tested.
There's a lot of poop in there to start with.
They tested the Seine last week, I think, and they still had significant amount of E. coli.
Yeah,
in there,
that's
pretty poop related.
That's hard to clean up.
It is, and that's an ancient river. I mean, there's been a city there since Roman times, and I don't think they even know how many things that they have their discharge in, like how many pipes and little underground things and stuff like that. I mean, it was only a couple years ago that I realized, and this is my ignorance, but I realized there's a Roman arena. Actually, in very small, but it's still there in Paris, and
they were like the minor leagues for the gladiators.
Exactly. So I was up there cheering for the Lions.
You were very happy when you got promoted.
but I read the story about this, and they were going to make a railroad line through this part of Paris, and they didn't even know there was an arena there because it had been covered over the years.
Oh, sure.
With encroaching, you know, people used it as a dump or whatever, and then more earth grew on, you know, was piled on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so a bunch of French intellectuals and writers and so on all got together to pay the railroad to go around it, basically. They raised money to preserve this Roman Colosseum, mini Colosseum. But the thing about it is that I'm just pointing out that whenever you live in an ancient city, you don't know what's going on. I mean, the infrastructure of that, every time there's any kind of, you know, a new building goes up in Jerusalem, they've got about eight civilizations to dig through before they actually can do it, you know. Until you finally get down to the ancient astronauts.
Yeah, I was going to say, until you find, like, the long, pointy skulls with the big eyes.
Oh, man. Oh, anyway, I joke about the Biden thing, but I don't know if you're like me. I'm angry.
Yeah.
That these stupid Democrats now, they look like they're the liars. They've been hiding this, been gaslighting us now for months. They're hiding what was going on. And the truth, and the other party looks like the truth tellers now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it to protect the fearless leader. So fearless leader principle, you know, also in place. It's like, what's to distinguish in the average voter's minds the one party from the other?
Yeah.
Most people don't know enough about policy to see that.
Well, but they both do it. They both do it.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and in this case, it looks like that's not too far-fetched.
Yeah.
So nice way of blowing your advantages.
Right. Right. And it's a no-win situation at this point. I mean, you can stick with Biden and with all the negatives that have come up in the last couple of weeks, which he hasn't dispelled.
No.
I mean, they've tried. And he's done okay here and there, but there's never been this moment of like, oh my God, he's
lucid, like, and refers to the president of Ukraine as Mr. Putin.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, okay, yeah, I mean, so. Yeah, that's a minor, I guess. People get things wrong all the time, but not all the time.
The margin for error is pretty low at this point. I mean, he had to come out after the debate and show that he still was sharp, you know, and he hasn't done that.
And again, it's not about age. It's not even about whether he could do the job, because I'm kind of feeling like, yeah, he could. But it's like looking at the danger that we're in with respect to the other candidate, seeing how many people are judging that he probably will not make it coherently to the end of his term, and yet not responding to that in a responsible way. That's the thing.
That Trump won't make it, or that
Biden won't. Yeah. And that the Democrats are not responding to that in a responsible way. That's the thing that just angers me. It's like you can go on TV and say, oh, this is the most important election in our lives, and then you're not acting like that's really the case.
Right. Right.
So
power is a pretty strong narcotic. And, you know,
I wouldn't know.
Well,
belonging to a powerless minority, I have no idea what that feels like.
You are a manager.
I'm a man. I guess it's intersectionality.
White male.
Needs to come
on.
In here.
I mean, there's, you know.
Yeah. But no, I know what you're saying.
But I mean, you know, but once you've got that, you know, that scepter, and you're sitting on the Iron Throne, I mean, you don't want to.
So it's just like, is there any witchcraft involved?
Because
I would get more interested in politics if there was more sorcery.
Yeah. And more nudity. Well, no, never mind. No, I take that back.
Yeah, not with these candidates.
No, we need some different candidates.
But, sorry, you can't run for president if you're over 35.
And your BMI is over 35.
Exactly.
Once you got that, you don't want to let it go. And it's really hard to do that gracefully. I mean, we've seen that with so many people in Washington, that's why we have so many people in their 80s, you know, essentially running that part
and
of our country.
And it varies from person to person. Nancy Pelosi in her 80s.
She seems pretty sharp.
Got
still.
It going, yeah.
Bernie Sanders seems pretty sharp.
Bernie Sanders, you know, I mean, he'd be doing fine if he was a president.
Now, part of it is you're under the microscope when you're the president.
Sure.
So, I mean, maybe those two wouldn't stand up under that scrutiny.
And I'm sure he works very hard and blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, it's just like, are you serious or are you not serious?
Yeah.
And then this rhetoric of, well, the elites are telling me to quit, but, you know, I'm doing what the people want. The people were hoodwinked. I mean, it turns out there's a story in the New York Times today that the Biden campaign has been like feeding questions to interviewers for ages now.
Right.
You know, this came out recently because there was a radio show down in North Carolina where it was discovered that the person who was doing the interview was given questions ahead of time. But apparently this is nothing new. They've been doing this for a while. And so you look at this and you're like, okay, what is it exactly that you're doing here? do you realize that you're protecting this person's ego? I mean, that's what's really happening, when really there's an existential threat to us all. Mm-hmm. I mean, that whole Supreme Court decision, that was like in the Star Wars movie, you know, where the Imperial Senate gives the Chancellor absolute power, right? You know?
When Jar Jar.
Jar Jar, yes.
Jar Jar Binks is like the deciding vote on whether they're going to be a
Senator
republic.
Senator Jar Jar.
Whether they're going to be a republic or a dictatorship.
Yeah.
We definitely.
Brett Kavanaugh, I think, would be the obvious comparison. Me so love the boofing.
Yeah, right. Me and Donkey Dave. Donkey Dave or whatever it was. Yeah, right. Squee.
Squee, that's it. Yeah, don't forget Squee.
I forgot about Squee.
You got to remember your Magnus Robot Fighter. Yeah. Come on.
Squee. Yeah, and I mean, you look at the alternative. It's like, well, that's obviously unacceptable. So I just,
it's obvious to us. It's not obvious to others,
right?
And you know, the voters in the United States, many ill-informed. I understand that, but I'm not going to poo-poo it. They're worried about this person's staying power.
Yeah,
and for all of his manifest and unending negatives, Trump looks like, at least superficially, like he's in charge.
Yeah. So one time I was at it was like a auto shop or something, right? Someplace with a waiting room, right? To wait for a while, and they had Fox News on, and they were talking about some things that Trump had floated, and they made it sound really reasonable. I mean, it was, and you know, just watching this, because I don't watch Fox. I mean, I'll see the clips that get sent around, but it was really startling to see. It was something, you know, I can't remember what it was, like maybe his tariffs plan or something. Yeah. that was. but they were saying, you know, he's floating this tariffs plan, and then they could cut the income taxes. And you know, you're sitting there listening to it in the waiting room or in your living room, and it sounds kind of reasonable. And you know, and then they used really short clips of him, so he sounds like he's
right
coherent and has a plan.
But that's where the debate thing was such a massive, horrifying failure. I mean, if the vice president had been up there, or any of the governors or whatever, every time Trump spouted out more of his half truths and outright lies, someone would have come back instantly and said, no, that's not right. Or here's what would happen if you did that. Yeah. Or yes, we've tried that before. This is why this doesn't work.
Or when he was taking credit for things that he had nothing to do with.
All this stuff. I mean, again, you're reading the economic data. Inflation is down again. I mean, for second consecutive month, it seems like it's bottoming out.
Crime rates are down.
Crime rates are down. All fewer, the actual data.
Fewer people are crossing the borders. Yeah. I mean,
things are not great in the United States. Yeah. We're the last people to say that.
But the big cities are not in flames.
Yes, their dystopic fantasy where they need the strong man to step in and kick all of our asses.
Right.
You know?
So, this week Trump was talking about bacon. Nobody eats bacon anymore because it's too expensive. It's gone up fourfold, and
he would know
its price. And I'd laughed. I don't usually.
You should eat shark meat.
I don't just electrocute them. One of the comments on the story I read said, "Oh, I guess the Mar-a-Lago omelet bar was out of bacon this morning."
Exactly. That's his survey of information. Is whatever happens to occur to him when it gets up.
Well, he probably complained that they were out of. Yeah. And then the cook said, "Well, it's pretty expensive,
Your Highness." Yes, we can't. Yeah. No. There's no butter for the royal slice of bread. Yes.
He had some rally the other day, and the people said that. I mean, the reporters said there were about 750 people there.
Okay.
And he said there were 45,000.
Oh man!
But the noteworthy thing is that it was he brought out Baron, his kid, his 18-year-old kid, and showed him off, which was like the first time really they've kind of used him in this campaign
as a prop.
Yeah. And people cheered wildly, of course, you know, and then Trump, being the piece of garbage human that he is, said, "Oh, Barron's really popular. I think he's more popular than Don Jr. and Eric." So even in this moment where it's like he's trying to say something nice about one kid, he has to pit everybody against each other for his love.
In Trump's mind, I'm sure he is more popular.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that's the that's the big deciding factor on your values. Are you popular? And so but you know, he's got this.
Well,
whole,
he's a fresh new product too.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, it's
like, tired of the old stuff. Come on. I mean, he's that way with his wives. Why shouldn't he be that way with his children?
Trading in my kids for a younger model.
Exactly. But meanwhile, I don't know if you saw this, but last summer, for 8 months in a row during the summer and into the spring, there was a guy that was going from the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center was going to the White House, who's an expert in Parkinson's disease.
Right.
And nobody knows. The official logs don't say what he was there for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, again, it's like, come on, you guys. You're supposed to be the guys that are like playing honest and fair and not truckling the leader and kissing people's butts and everything. And I know that the establishment political parties in this country are a joke, but this is just, the parallels are too eerie. It's a losing situation.
Mm-hmm. As far as I can see. Well, yeah, and again, at this point, I mean, they either stick with this very flawed candidate, or they jettison him, and then there are a lot of complications if you try to add somebody at this point. I mean, there's a lot of money raised in Biden's name, and there's, you know, I'm sure there's legal questions about whether you can just transfer that over to, you know, Kamala Harris or whoever. Yeah.
You were saying before the show, you know, we're going to have the echoes of the 68 convention in Chicago. Think if the Gaza issue becomes a dividing factor, which it very well could.
Well, there'll be protesters.
Yeah. But in terms of deciding which candidate.
We could see a disputed convention as we saw in 68. We could see, you know, police violence against protesters. It's Chicago. I mean, come on. And I mean, it could very much echo 1968. It's very strange.
This is where a lot of bribery money would be good up front.
Bribery for
the police officers.
Oh.
Oh, did I drop that 50, officer? I'm sorry.
No, the Supreme Court said that's not bribery.
Oh, what is that?
That's just showing appreciation.
Oh, I see. I see.
Do you think they're finding every week they find more and more Clarence Thomas, more of his trips. I mean, he took a yacht trip to Russia, to Putin's hometown.
Wow.
That was like gratis.
I think he's from St. Petersburg.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's where it went. That makes sense.
And, I mean, I'm sure, well, you were there. I'm sure it's nice.
Oh, it's very nice. Yeah, it's a lovely city.
But, you know, he kind of forgot to report that one. Oh, I went to Russia.
Oh, I forgot to mention he invited me, too. So.
Maybe that's it. He doesn't want the other justices to feel guilt, you know, kind of feel like, oh, he's getting all the good stuff. He's getting all the candy, you know. Yeah. So he doesn't want them to feel jealous and hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, Kavanaugh gets to go to Boise.
That's a good way. A kegger at George Washington University.
Hey, this is a shocking, I don't know if it's shocking. But
what's that?
I feel bad about this. So the AARP did a poll to find out whether its members, this is here in Wisconsin, members aged 50 and older, who they like better? Do they like former President Donald Trump or current President Joe Biden?
Yes.
And they found out that that Trump leads among their members. Now, this is not a very, you know, scientific poll, of course, but it's not too far off from some of the other polls that have been done in the state. But he leads 48-41 among those who are members of AARP Wisconsin. And among likely voters of all ages in Wisconsin, Trump is ahead right now. And there's other candidates, too. I saw that Jill Stein is getting back into the, just to make sure that we have a replay of 2016. And, of course, there are some people that, like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., including somebody that called us out a couple weeks ago. He got about 9% of the vote. This is a Marquette Law School poll.
Oh, really?
Right now it's really kind of sad. This is why the quote unquote elites are worried, because, you know, Tammy was doing really well until recently, and now Eric Hovde is pulled ahead of her a little bit in polling, and he's certainly ahead of. And I love this, given some of the comments that Hovde's made. He's certainly ahead of her in this AARP poll among people that are 50. Or older, so
they like his kill us all with the push us all off on the ice.
Very self-sacrificing of them.
Push us out on the ice floe. I like his policy on that.
Right. Well, that's because it's just like the Satanists, you know. It's not like you think you're going to get anything out of it. You just want to see other people suffer, you know. It's like march down the hall. She really deserves it.
That's what I was saying about the Supreme Court. Like, oh, Clarence Thomas got a new RV. You know, where's my RV? Well, plus, it, you know, that way you keep the price down, too, of the bribes. I mean, gratuities or whatever you want to call them. You know, because if they have to, like,
appreciation.
If they have to give, like, $500,000 RVs to everybody on the court, that starts to add up.
Yeah, you know? It sure does.
That cuts into your shareholder value. Yeah.
Smithers, take that out of my back pocket.
So the Republican National Convention is going to be in that horrible city, Milwaukee, pretty soon. It's going to start up pretty quick. And
it's going to take them another 2 months to get the stench out.
Sex workers of the Midwest rejoice.
I wasn't going to say it, but thank you for going there. Oh, well, you know, they're there to celebrate Christian family values, so you know what that means.
But one thing about the convention is you will not be allowed to bring guns into the convention
and
hall.
Why not?
I don't know. I would think it would be safer.
It would sort things out pretty well.
If everybody had guns, it would be a lot safer.
Every
then.
One of them, yes.
Yeah, because then if somebody tried to pull something, they could all
if
just
I was running
open
the
fire.
Republican National Committee, they'd all have to come in with guns.
So start blasting.
Where's your gun, dude?
You can vote that way. You could just vote by Yeehaw! Shooting in the air. but no, for some reason, even though things are safer when the more people have guns. Yeah. They're not going to allow guns in the building. I mean, it might be a Milwaukee ordinance or something.
That's very possible.
But you'd think they would stand up to that hypocrisy.
Yeah. So. Well, that's why the next they're actually going to be in Waukesha most of the time anyway. I'm sure. the evil anti Dane County.
I have a friend who's friends with a sex worker, and I don't worry. No, just I mean,
never expected that to come out of your mouth.
No, just like friend.
Yeah, friend, and
I don't know where she lives. She's out in California or something. And my friend is trying to convince her to come here for the convention. She's like, you will make so much money.
Oh man!
So you know it's good for the economy, I guess. But although people in Milwaukee are saying, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that it doesn't have the boost that they were told was coming. That they were kind of oddly enough, they were sold a bill of goods that didn't really materialize.
Yeah,
Foxconn.
Funny that.
But
right. 24,000 people at my rally. Yeah. Or did you say 42?
45.
Hey, you mentioned earlier that violent crime has gone down in the United States. And, of course, this is according to the FBI. Soon to be replaced by nothing but Trump cronies, apparently. But they actually have something called the Quarterly Uniform Crime Report. And they try to amass information from 12,000 law enforcement agencies around the country, which is about 77% of the population is covered by this, which is fairly suggestive of what's going on. And they found that their crime had dropped significantly in the first quarter of 2024. The violent crime in the United States, according to this compilation of data that the FBI is doing, dropped by 15% compared to the first quarter of 2023. And in case you're wondering what is covered in this, we're talking about murders, rapes, robberies, and aggravated assaults. Even property crimes fell. And so from January to March, the first quarter, 26% decrease in murders, 25.7% decrease in rapes, 17.8% decrease in robberies, and about a 13% decrease in aggravated assaults. And even property crimes, which is the one thing now that they've gone to as plan B in their nation's falling apart. I don't know if you've noticed that, but that's the when they see this data about murders and stuff going down, they have to find, well, property crime, you know, as all these, you know, we need to shoot them as they're coming out of the stores kind of thing. Even that went down by about 15%. So. And, of course, the widespread public perception is that crime is rising.
Sure.
And I wonder why. Have you ever watched Fox News?
Well, it's because of those 20 million immigrants that other countries
have
released from their prisons and, quote, insane asylums. Well, I mean, and it is always, I always kind of laugh when I see candidates for president or Senate or the Congress going on about, you know, what they're going to do about the crime rate. And, you know, we've got all these plans for the crime. It's not really a federal issue. I mean, you know, there's some funding involved. And stuff,
right.
But I mean, there's not a lot of correlation between, you know, tougher laws or funding of the police and you know, adding more police in the streets.
Right, and be careful what you ask for, too, because a lot of the money that's been provided to local police forces in the last 20 years or so has been in the form of military.
Right,
elements.
Right. So
you really don't want that.
Yeah, so, I mean, the stuff that they tout as, you know, I mean, this goes back, well, forever, but, I mean, like, Clinton made a big deal out of, you know, our crime bill.
More cops on the corner,
Yeah, and then that doesn't really affect the crime rate. What affects the crime rate is demographics.
Yeah.
You know, whether, you know, you have a lot of young people.
Young and itchy.
Males.
Yeah, to be obvious.
But then also things like the economy, like you know, if people have money, they're less likely to think, you know, feel desperate and go, I have to go rob a liquor store.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, a lot of violent crime is connected with the drug trade. And of course, again, if there are legitimate ways in which you can make a living, then most people will want to do that. But if there aren't, then you find non-legitimate ways and you don't have a police force to help enforce what you do. So interestingly enough, it almost immediately starts a crime problem.
Yeah. And then the other thing are things like social programs that are, you know, effective things like, you know, early head start type programs for kids, food and, you know, nutrition programs.
Well, kiss those all goodbye.
You know, I mean, especially like trying to raise kids that are, you know, have a chance to, you know, develop their brain and learn how to be, you know, humans.
Yeah. And, impulse control.
You know, so, I mean, all those types of things, you know, even like domestic abuse programs and things like that. And those are all things that can reduce the crime rate, but not throwing a big funding bill with, you know, with 19 different things tacked onto it that don't really amount to anything.
Well, but it's performative.
That's, exactly. Yeah. I mean, a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's like, you know, I'm going to make you secure by spending a lot more money with Boeing and all the other defense contractors.
Oh, good little feedback there.
Get some crackling. So.
Yeah, I just got finished with a book called Religion as Make-Believe, and talking about, you know, how interesting it is that people will not, they'll never pray for money in a Swiss bank account. They always pray that, you know, enough people will contribute to my enough people will be kind enough to do my GoFundMe thing, you know, because they know in their heart of hearts the limitations of what would be involved in praying for something that would be obviously what they need. And so they you realize it's a kind of make-believe because they don't want anything that would definitively disprove that. Politics is like that too. It's a politics of make-believe. There are various stances that people take. I take the abortion issue, for instance. I don't see a lot of fetal funerals going on out there. I don't see a lot of people having funerals for eggs. I don't see
adoption skyrocketed.
I don't see people cursing God at all the miscarriages that occur.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a real thing. They don't think through the consequences of it. It's just a performative thing that has meaning for people to say and to be counted as being on that side of the issue. But in terms of working it out, in terms of what that means, it seems like there's not a lot of thought put into it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, inflation did cool off last month, as I mentioned. The consumer price index climbed at a moderate pace to June compared with the year earlier, and it fell on a monthly basis. So this is good news for the Federal Reserve. Overall inflation was 3% in June on a yearly basis, down 3.3% in May, and softer than 3.1%. So if you take out food and fuel prices, the core price index climbed 3.3% compared to a year earlier, down from the previous report. By the way, as another thing that came out this week, I don't know if you saw that, but the Federal Reserve was saying, please be careful that we don't politicize economic data. The Federal Reserve did a study where they were talking about their worries that they have that basically like people like the Bureau of Labor Statistics and you know, stuff like that, if these are politicized too much, we won't be able to have accurate data in order to make predictions. So it would be like a, you know, totalitarian country, basically,
where,
you know, you're basing it on stuff that's just making the leader happy or whatever.
Yeah. So, well, I saw that when I had my state job when Scott Walker got elected. There was pressure to make the numbers look better. I mean, you know, and they didn't really come right out and say, you know, lie.
Yeah.
But they said, you know, they would kind of try. Can you squeeze? It was kind of like the Trump. Can you find me some votes sort of thing? It's like, well, these numbers don't quite look right. Can you take another look at them and things like that? And you know, you get the message that it's like, oh, that number's too high. I better take a harder look at it.
I think that the Scott Walker was very good at talking about economic growth in Wisconsin without talking about the unfortunate areas where it was happening, like Dane County. You know. Oh, the part of the state that's doing exactly the opposite of what I want to do is the most prosperous part of the
also,
state.
It's also doing pretty well in Milwaukee. Oh, never mind.
Yeah. So,
horrible, horrible city. So, all right, we have to take a little break and play some announcements. And then, just a reminder that you and I are going to be staffing the WRT booth at the FET. Tomorrow.
Fête de Marquette.
Tomorrow. You can wear your French
shirt. I'm wearing my French shirt. That's right. I thought I'd break it in.
Yeah.
Smell it up good and nice. So I can be nice and French when I get there tomorrow.
Spray a little Febreze on it. You're good.
Yeah, I'm good.
But we'll be at the WRT booth from 3 to 5.
All right.
And we've invited the rest of the Mel and Floyd family. I don't know. Yep. I think Floyd might stop in for a while. I know Ruby.
Squeaky will be there.
Gone. Squeaky. And Donkey Dave.
And all the rest.
Squee. but anyway, come on down and say hi. The booth is there. The booth is there the whole weekend here. It's been since Thursday. But but our little shift is going to be 3 to 5.
Three to five. So, and we'd be happy to see you.
Yeah, but otherwise, just come and say hi. There's some free stuff. There's... you know, you can...
it's a good fet, too, because fets go.
You can throw pies at us or put us in the dunking tank. I don't know exactly what they're going to have set
up
for
us. I was actually in a dunking tank.
Were you really?
Many years ago, yeah. It was the institution I work at, they had a... students voted on who they would most like to see.
Oh, it was a landslide.
And they had to. And here's the part that tells you they were serious. It was something for the student senate, like for some event they were having. So you had to actually contribute like $1 a vote.
Yeah.
And so every student had to put money in for their vote.
Oh, so
and so
real freedom of speech.
My jar was just.
Oh, I'm sure.
Me and the director of campus ministry. So
yeah, that makes sense.
The people you most want to dunk.
Well, we should do that at one of these.
Yes. See how much money we can make.
We're probably
going to
make a lot of money.
Yeah. They filmed me.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
So, all right, we have to take a break and play some announcements. But just a reminder, you're listening to WRT 89.9 FM in Madison. You're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show. And you could be listening on 89.9 FM. You might be listening on the internet at WRTFM.org. Could be listening in the future because we put these shows and all of our shows up on the archives page. Hopefully you're using the WRT app, which is really handy. And again, thanks to Mindless Minion D-Cubed, another part of the Mel and Floyd family, who's does the file management so you can listen to these shows on Spotify or Apple or Apple Pods or wherever you get your pods.
Yep.
So, all right, we're going to take a brief break and come back with, you got anything good?
IRS. They did the crackdown on the millionaires and the billionaires, and let's find out how much money they made.
Ooh. And closer to home, the Madison Public Libraries are looking at cutting some hours because of the budget problems.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT, thanks its listener sponsors, and Bluestem Jazz, presenting the Christopher Dahmen Sextet on Friday, July 5th at the North Street Cabaret, 8 p.m. Chicago bassist and composer Christopher Dahmen.
And we're back. Ignore that announcement I played about something happening July 5th. So.
Oh. Is that involving Mr. Putin or Vice President Trump?
Madison Public Libraries are debating this week how cuts to next year's budget would reduce services. Oh dear. The cuts under consideration include eliminating Sunday and evening hours at all libraries.
Wow.
And roughly 18% of existing library programs. Combined, the steps would result in more than a dozen staff layoffs and cut more than $1 million from the budget annually.
Golly. I would think staying open in the evenings would actually be, you know, I mean, I think about who would take advantage of it.
No, I agree. Yeah. I mean, open later or something, you know, you know, open at 10 or something and stay open till 7. I don't know.
Yeah. But, I think about people coming after work or
whatever. Exactly. You know, in the evenings. So, No, that's a good point.
On the plus side, you know, the Biden administration had asked for money to enhance the ability of the IRS to go after tax cheats, especially those in the $1 million and above income bracket. And it's been a success. So this was according to a report from the from Daniel Werfel, who's the IRS commissioner, and was recently touted in a briefing that the Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, did with some reporters. And according to the secretary, efforts to increase tax fairness and bring in revenue from high-end taxpayers who have not paid what they owe are already paying off for the American people. And according to Commissioner Werfel, he said that the IRS had targeted 1,600 taxpayers who made more than $1 million of income and who had owed more than $250,000 in tax debt. So he went after these people, and his theory is that many of these rich taxpayers had not paid their bills because they thought the IRS wouldn't be able to go after them. I mean, it's all part of the Republican plan, right? They had taken resources from the entity for years or not increased them as they needed to and so on. And so, you know, people who were rich got the message. But he said there's a new message now. He said our message for these taxpayers is that now we are resourced and we can do the job of ensuring that they pay. And you remember, Mel, that the money was in the Inflation Reduction Act, which was enacted back in August of 2022. So they got $1 billion out of these people.
Wow.
And that's, you know, even with the U.S. government, that's not just pocket money. So that's pretty good. The IRS is also focused on finding more than 100,000 high wealth individuals who the agency believes have not even filed taxes in years. And it's been ramping up audits of hedge funds and real estate investment partnerships. You know, all the creepiest, most horrible parts of our unregulated hyper-capitalist economy. And they also are cracking down on, and Clarence might want to pay attention to this one, abuse of corporate jets for personal travel.
Oh, no.
You mean I'll have to go through the TSA like everybody else?
No,
yeah, I'm pretty well.
I wouldn't expect that.
I don't know.
So there's a guy named Tom Waddington.
All right.
He's rowing across the Atlantic Ocean by himself.
Okay.
He's in a little rowboat, and he's rowing across the Atlantic. And on Sunday,
he found
that he had a lot of company when a pod of pilot whales just swarmed around him.
Cool.
They followed him for hours, growing from just a few animals to hundreds of whales. One even smacked into his small boat.
So oh dear!
The whale, but they were mostly friendly and
playful.
Yeah,
they're just nosy.
They popped their heads above the surface, and
or whatever it is when you're a whale.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And wanted to
spouty,
wanted to play. And this guy, he's rowing 2,000 nautical miles from Newfoundland to the United Kingdom, and he was just watching all these
in a rowboat.
And some like a little rowboat. I mean, it's
what's his name again? I got to look this guy.
Tom Paddington.
Tom Paddington.
Yeah.
Paddington.
So, okay. But so he had like hundreds of little whales following him around, and just
what the hell is this? They're playing. Thinking.
Well, I thought they just attacked boats now, but
apparently
they must have liked Tom.
Yeah, he was.
It's a little boat. They probably
it's a little
didn't care
boat.
About
yeah,
that.
They're not as threatened by that.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't make as much noise either.
Yeah,
that's the big thing they're saying that.
Oh right.
You know, the ocean, you know, acoustics are super important for these animals, and all the noise that we're injecting into the ocean makes it hard for them to communicate, and they lose some of their ability to navigate, and so on and so forth. So maybe the fact that it was something quiet, they liked that.
Yeah, probably. So, you know. And bite-sized.
Nothing to worry about. No.
Here's a story out of Minnesota, but I think it holds pretty much everywhere. It's the Minnesota Lottery. Somebody's done a study on it. And I know, hold on, are you sitting down?
I am sitting down.
It's a regressive tax.
Yeah. Really? There's pie in the sky when you die.
In the and this is Minnesota, so this is from their lottery executive director. You know, or in other states, they'd be talking about how wonderful it is.
Look over there.
But the goody-goody two-shoes in Minnesota say, well, the guy who runs the lottery is going, well, it's kind of a crappy deal. He's saying that each dollar spent on a lottery ticket in Minnesota.
I'm not really good at this either.
Is this how you do this? He says that not only fuels the dreams of potential winners, but also drives millions of dollars toward crucial state services and vital projects that protect our environment and natural resources. So he actually did. He did schmooze a little bit. But,
yeah. They do something with the money.
These millions come disproportionately from people in Minnesota's low-income neighborhoods, affecting turning the state lottery into a highly regressive tax, as people have known for ages. But here's how it breaks down. In the richest 5% of Minnesota's zip codes, the average households earn about $140,000 per year, and their annual lottery sales are about $100 per adult. So then when flipping around, going down to the bottom of the income distribution, families with making an average of $45,000 per year spend about $150 on the lottery. So 50% more than the wealthy people, which it makes sense. Oh, I mean, in a way, it makes sense. It's like, you know, I got to do something to get out of this thing.
Right.
And, you know. Yeah, I know it doesn't make mathematical sense. But,
right. Entertainment for the mathematically challenged.
Yeah.
Well, it shows a level of desperation, I think.
Well, and it's kind of icky that all the governments are in this now, and they have no qualms about taking money from the poorest people and sucking it up. I mean, they think that's a great thing. They act like it's free money. You know, it's like we put the lottery out there, and this free money just pours.
And the suckers.
In.
I mean. The hardy citizens.
And I get that it's certainly optional. No, nobody tells you have to go buy lottery tickets, but you know, the reality is that this is how it works. It's regressive.
This is what I think causes a background level of despair. It's the United States of Scamerica. You feel like everything's just a giant vampire trying to suck your lifeblood out. And I was especially feeling that way this week when I read in the Wisconsin State Journal that SSM Health is going to sell three of its nonprofit nursing homes, including one right here in Madison. It's the largest of Dane County's 18 nursing homes, to a for-profit company out of New Jersey. So you know this is a scam, right? I mean, okay, it's hard enough to break even doing this kind of work, even if it's not for profit, right? Even if it's a nonprofit. But when you have for profit, you've always got somebody skimming off. And that means that people are going to get paid less. It means that the hours of contact between the staff and the residents are going to be reduced. And it's just another way of you know, basically sucking at the government teat, because, of course, a lot of this is being paid for through the government money. Nationally, for-profit companies have been buying more nursing homes. And presently, they own about 72% of all the facilities in the United States. It's like for-profit prisons or something. I mean, it's just like, you know, this is a bad idea from the beginning. There was a quote in the article from Barbara Bowers. She's a retired nursing professor at UW-Madison. And she says, this is really unfortunate. When nonprofit nursing homes become for-profit, there's a few things that are fairly predictable. The staffing levels go down, as I was saying. The benefits for staff are less. Turnover rates go up. And familiarity with staff is one of the most important things for families. And so that's dissipated as well. So this is what we do. We find out ways of helping us all live longer. But, of course, we promise one thing, and what actually gets delivered is, you know, a life of, you know, basically you've got to take drugs all the time and you've got to have medical intervention all the time. And then we put them in a place which is not being run to their benefit. It's being run so that some profit takers in New Jersey can be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we think that we've done a good job, I guess.
Sure.
So, and it's just like, ugh. By the way, let's figure out which candidate would be more in favor of that. Those of you in the AARP poll of continuing that trend, which of the two major presidential candidates would be more in favor of continuing unrestrained capitalist exploitation of old people? Can you guess?
Here's an update. MyPillow is facing eviction from its primary Shakopee manufacturing plants. This is a few months after being evicted from another warehouse in Shakopee.
Oh.
So MyPillow is having a little trouble there.
Yeah. But for to be your pillow.
Some reason.
After he gets through bankruptcy court.
I wonder if he'll be in Milwaukee for the convention.
He's jockeying for some kind of role.
Yeah.
He wants to be the election czar or something. I'm not making this up. Apparently, he's been reaching out, well, whatever he does, screeching out to the Trump people and saying he would love to be put in. I think that would be, you never know what's worse. I mean, you know, is tyranny's bad? Inefficient tyranny could be probably even worse, right?
Like
in the movie Brazil, right? It's like, yeah, it's a completely inefficient bureaucratic state. Nothing gets done right, and yet they do it with absolute impunity, right? I mean, put him in charge of elections.
Well, Mussolini did
that.
Sure. Mussolini did not have the trains run on time, by the way.
No. But those black shirts were really nice.
Yeah. So. I liked Mike Lindell better when he was Sven Gulli. I thought that was good stuff. But or when he was the Undertaker in the wrestling.
Yeah. That mustache has a life of its own, by the way.
Yeah, so I know it wasn't.
It just kind of goes from one human to another.
Yeah, he wasn't the Undertaker. He was like the Crypt Keeper.
Yes.
Yeah, so. All right. What states have the best quality of sleep? Where do you get a good night's sleep?
Wyoming.
Wyoming, doesn't show up in the top 10.
Here, all right.
I've got the top 10 and the
Hawaii.
And the bottom 10. Hawaii is in the top 10.
Yep.
So, but, okay, number one.
The only thing you have to worry about is feral chickens in Hawaii.
Really. They're really bad. And feral cats.
Oh, they're really bad.
And cats.
Yeah.
Feral cats.
Well, it's the feral chickens that are attracting them.
You would think that's a problem that would solve itself.
Yeah,
but,
right.
So
number one,
idea. South Dakota.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. So. Well, people go to sleep there just during the day.
Yeah.
Where are we? Oh, yeah.
Wake up on the embalming table. Oh, I was just taking a nap.
It's South Dakota.
You do get woken up by the governor's shotgun going off every once in a while, though. I shouldn't say that. I've got Clopsy.
No, I got Clopsy here in the studio with us. Watch out.
Hey, buddy.
So Clopsy's very happy here today.
Yeah.
He's not very nervous at all. So he's liking here. Okay, so top 10 best quality of sleep. South Dakota, Nebraska, right. Utah.
Okay.
Idaho.
Yeah.
See, a lot of places where there's not a lot.
A lot of people.
Not
yeah.
a lot. A lot of people.
And it's spread out.
It's dark. It's darker too.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So oh, that's definitely true.
That helps.
Less light pollution.
Minnesota, because they're always on these lists because they're such goody two shoes. Iowa,
because they think like hot chocolate is a stimulant. So probably that's part of it.
Have a little lutefisk and it yeah. knocks you right out.
Oh, I'm feeling a little sleepy.
New Jersey, which is surprising.
That is strange.
Hawaii, California, Maryland. Now, the worst states.
Okay.
And as anytime you have a list of.
Yes,
of
we know who it is.
Of the negatives.
Yes.
It's just think Confederacy.
Yeehaw!
Well, West Virginia, they weren't part of the Confederacy, but Nevada.
No, they had purposely pulled away.
Right. Give them credit where credit is
due. Good for that.
Credit
yeah.
is due.
Good for them.
Louisiana, Kentucky, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi.
Louisiana's the worst.
Tennessee. West Virginia was the worst.
Oh, West Virginia was the worst.
Nevada, Louisiana, Kentucky, Arkansas, yeah. Yeah. Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Oklahoma, and Missouri.
Yeah.
So
Missouri. Loves company.
So there it is. So if you want a good night's sleep, go to South Dakota.
Yeah.
That could be like their tourist slogan. Come here and sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of when I lived in Kentucky. Did we have sleep problems? But I was younger then, so I probably didn't notice as much.
It might have been the guns going off.
The guns. Yeah. I don't think people drink a lot of coffee there, but they drink a lot of alcohol. I'll tell you that. that can disrupt your sleep.
That does. So.
Yeah.
Hey Madison's going to have, well, we already have, but since we got so much rain in June, we got almost 9 inches of rain in June.
Wow.
Mosquitoes are going to be really, really bad, according to an entomologist at UW-Madison. He said, all that rain will certainly affect how many mosquitoes are buzzing around. He said, people are already saying that it seems like there are a lot of mosquitoes, and it's going to get worse there, so... But this guy says you're going to be walking through clouds of mosquitoes.
Oh, great.
As you're walking through the grass.
Just have to be out in the sun a lot, I guess. Yeah, I'm one of those people that differentially attracts mosquitoes.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. And, I mean, this kind of runs in my family. My Aunt Hilda's that way as well. And everybody else would be like, oh, what a lovely day. And you're like, slap, 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 you know. I guess I'm so Christ-like. I'm just taking the hit for you, you know.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is, you may have noticed this about me. I talk a lot, and I think that I was reading somewhere that if you exhale a lot, you know, a lot of carbon dioxide, that it attracts the mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm,
so I'm going to take on the vow of silence when I'm out and about this summer because I do not want to deal.
Vow of citronella.
Yeah, exactly.
No, they're really bad in my backyard. I run the dog out there, and just it's a slap fest. So, even for like 5 minutes, it's like, okay, this is enough. And sometimes we got a little woods in the backyard.
Sure.
I'll go in there sometimes, and it's like, let's get out of here.
Let's go
back and watch TV on the sofa.
Sanguinary parasites always bothered me.
Yeah,
it's just a little too, you know. Again, vampiric. I'm just kind of like, no, you don't get my blood. You have a piece of this finger if you want, but it's blood. That's mine. We're talking about France and the fete's coming up. I just want to mention that the Moulin Rouge, the famous French cabaret, has restored its iconic windmill. I don't know if you heard about this, but the blades broke and fell to the ground back in April. And they wanted to make sure that they had the blades. But, you know, Moulin just means windmill in French. So Moulin Rouge is the red mill. And so they wanted to have the little windmill on there, and they wanted to have it done before the Paris Olympics. And, of course, the flame is going to pass through Paris on July 15th, so they wanted to have that. And so it's there. The blades are back on. It's just not the same without them. So people were very upset, probably more upset than when Notre Dame fell apart. But what happened to your blades around the world, apparently? According to the manager, Jean-Victor Clerico, he says that sympathy letters were sent from all around the world.
Oh, wow.
And they managed to get the right on schedules, managed to get them back up. And they have the bright neon lights on there, too, on the windmill, which they used to have. And everybody's very excited. So they also did the can-can out on the street. And it's the It's the 130th anniversary of doing the Can-Can.
Oh, so very that's nice.
Only in France.
Hey, I just want to remind you that if you have anything you want to say to us, keep it to yourself. No, you can write to us at melonfloydmailbag@gmail.com, as Dwayne did.
Oh, excellent,
and
Dwayne.
Dwayne he's from Jefferson, the Jefferson Poultry Collective, actually.
Oh, nice.
Speaking of chickens, as we were earlier. But he sent a video of wombats.
Oh, excellent.
And I don't think we've ever noticed this. I don't think we've ever mentioned this before, because wombats have, you know, some very strange features.
They have interesting features.
Yeah, but they've got, like, the little pouch. They're marsupials. Yeah.
Yes.
But the pouch doesn't face forward.
No, it's because they dig in the dirt.
They dig in the dirt, so it faces backwards.
Yes.
And they put the little baby wombat back by their butt.
Yes.
But it makes sense, because then they're not getting dirt in their face.
Otherwise it comes in. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So they've got it. Yeah. So they walk around with their babies on their butts. Thanks to Dwayne there. So yes. And Christopher said, "Are you going to change the date of your Lafette appearance?" We had a little trouble with the Waterfront Festival.
I had to ask you when it was. I'd forgotten.
Yeah, it's 3 to 5.
3 to 5 on Saturday.
Saturday, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And that's in stone, like the like the 15 commandments.
Exactly. So, 17, I think.
Is it 17?
Do not covet your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's wife's ass. It's a long list. Hey, 18,000 people rode the new line between Chicago and the Twin Cities.
Oh, cool.
In its first month. Preliminary figures from Amtrak show that 18,500 people used the rail service's new passenger line from Chicago to St. Paul during its first full month of service. This is the Borealis line. It has stops in Milwaukee, Columbus, Portage, Wisconsin Dells, Toma, and La Crosse. And
it would make sense if it stopped in Madison.
It would make sense, wouldn't it?
We should have. Somebody should have thought of that.
Well, Companion and I are going to go up to St. Paul for my birthday.
Oh, nice!
So we're going to take the train up, and we're very excited to see that it's so popular. Amtrak said that again, 18,500 passengers amounts to a daily average of about 300 passengers on each of the eastbound and westbound daily trains, and the trains are operated by Amtrak under contracts with Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Wow.
So, hot damn.
This is how old I am. I remember as a kindergartner, we went on a field trip on a passenger train.
Did you?
It went from Owatonna to Waseca, which is 10, 12 miles away or
sure.
So. And I still remember that. It's like, oh, this is really cool. And then I'm sure that very shortly afterwards, they quit having passenger service. But it was like, unless I imagine that, which is possible at this point.
One of my most bizarre bus experiences was once riding on a bus, and there was a bus driver. He was a surly sort that used to get into conversations, sort of one-sided conversations with passengers. And there was this elderly lady who was sitting in the front seats, often, you know, reserved for those with, you know, mobility issues or the elderly. And he was yelling at her and said, "Why did your generation destroy our rail system?"
Oh, no.
It's like, dude, calm down. I mean, I get your point.
I think I know that bus driver. I think he listens to the show.
Yes. I'm sure you do. And I'm thinking, you know.
Tree, I'm talking to you. No, he was always very nice. Yeah, he wouldn't do that.
But I'm just kind of like, you know, Mabel was not responsible personally for that. I'm sorry. She probably loved the train as much as you do.
Mabel. An international team of scientists have discovered ancient fossil chromosomes of a female woolly mammoth from 52,000 years ago.
Good heavens.
Preserved in a glass-like state. It's a treasure trove of genetic data on the mammoths. And they've had, you know, tiny fragments, they say, of DNA. But this is a sample where the three-dimensional arrangement of these DNA fragments was frozen in place. So it preserves the structure of the whole chromosome. So it's like a big leap forward. So as you know, I'm just hanging on until I can see a woolly mammoth, and then I'm gone. So.
There's a new dinosaur they found. I heard about this. Yeah, it's called
Is it alive?
Lociceratops rangiformis. It's
excellent.
A 5-ton herbivore with this big curving brow horns and a giant bladed spikes all over its tail. So it sounds pretty cool. And they thought it was something else. They thought it was a Medusa ceratops, which is a totally different thing. But this, but it didn't have a nose horn, and its brow horns were hollow, and a bunch of other things were different. And so they realized, oh, wait, this is a brand new thing. It was found in northern Montana, and it's now is residing in the Museum of Evolution in Denmark. Denmark. So a new dinosaur. Hard to miss, you'd think, but, you know, it's in the ground. So.
It's been there for 6,000 years.
Just,
I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, so. Yeah, right, exactly. So. Top evangelical scientists have discovered, yes.
Yes, Adam lived to be 942 years old.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, again, it's
we got to get going here. But
we got stuff that's older than that that we know.
I know exactly. Anyway. So, okay, time to declare the weekend. Enjoy the weekend. Come on out and say hi to us at the FET.
We're going to say hi back.
Saturday at from 3 to 5. And who knows, we might have a dunk tank set up. I mean, I don't know if we'll have it in time for this one. But so. Pants, was great to see you, as you always. Buddy. So Clopsy says hi.
Oh, Clopsy's sitting, so adorable.
Sitting in my lap, very quiet.
Very demurely.
He likes it down here now.
Yeah, he does.
Stick around, the kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with Real Jaguar, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now, Labor Radio, Blues Friday on My Mind, all kinds of great stuff here. You are listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll yak at you soon. Bye-bye.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, July 12th.
This is Bird Note. I'm J. Drew Lanham, an ornithologist, naturalist, and writer. As we consider redacting the names of people from birds, it's important to remember birds are flesh, feather, and bone monuments of life, hope, and higher aspiration. So it does matter. But I'm just one black bird-loving ornithologist, so what can I do? This is what. I'm taking the lark by the horns and forming my own committee of one. Henceforth, I no longer refer to Bachman's sparrow by the racist's name tacked to it by some other racist buddy named John James. It is now back to a better, melodiously appropriate name in my book, Pine Woods Sparrow. Likewise, the likely extinct southern warbler with the Bachman name on its front end will also be typed by habitat instead of hate. It will be Swamp Cane Warbler, because that's what it loved to skulk around in before we drove it out of existence. Those are just a couple of the naming controversies currently in